Our next talk will be by Jyoti. I hope I pronounce it almost correctly. And she has a background in cybersecurity, data science, and machine learning, and she will show us how to use agentic AI systems to proactively tackle cybersecurity. Thanks a lot. Stage is yours.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Today we are going to discuss a very specific topic, which is related to the fact that there are certain supply chain attacks which might happen in Python packages as well. To start with, let's have some small demo on what this supply chain attack is all about. So in real world, what happens is that let's say if a particular attacker wants to infiltrate into any particular company, then what they do is they look at what products they have been using, and probably if they infect that particular product, they end up or have more chances of infecting more than one company at the end of the day. So that is what is known as supply chain attack. In layman terms, just to understand it, so let's say you order a pizza. Now, the restaurant doesn't know about anything, whether the content of the pizza is contaminated or not. However, at the back end, let's say the dough was contaminated somehow, or the raw materials were contaminated somehow. The restaurant doesn't know about anything. However, at the end of the day, you shouldn't be eating that because the ingredients were like that. So let's do a small calculations here. Raise your hands if you do pip install in your day-to-day life. Or probably whenever you end up, cloning a particular repo, then you do requirement.txt and then install all the packages over there. Which is pretty common with us, right? What can go wrong with this? Now, let's just try to see or try to look at what eventually might happen at the end of the day. I'll talk about what are the different ways threat actors can look into it. Attackers can infiltrate into your system. First is the pip install that we were talking about. It leads to install time package installation, which you might not be aware about. Exposure to data, which is feature stores or anything that you're using that particular package that you installed. Will be something, or the data is something that can be actually at the end of the day looked by the threat actor also. CI/CD builds, you have at the time of the assembly or the wheels buildup, there are certain credentials which might be leaked. This particularly happens when you are using company credentials to build or install those packages. We have a tendency of storing our credentials in .env files or service accounts, and those are also vulnerable at the end of the day. Now, we can see two examples over here. How many are in favor of one? Okay, and how many think that B is fine? Now let's just look at what is different. So request, these two letters have been actually switched. And just because it is kind of ignored in general cases, whenever we are writing something or we have a typo in our particular pip installs. And just a small switch of the letters could also lead to the threat actor being, introducing new packages in the industry as well. Let's talk about four types of attacks that we can encounter day-to-day life or could be more aware about or have some chances of, removing that also or be aware of. First is typo scouting. The first one that we discussed just previously, request versus request. And over here, you can see there are certain packages that look alike and BigBrain has a tendency of not differentiating between those, or it could be related to the fact that we have some typos in our whenever we are pip installing, but still there exists another package which even actually looks similar to the typos that we make at the end of the day. This is a very specific example which was related to PY packages, PYPI packages. And the package which is mentioned over here is Jellyfish. What they did is, instead of L, they replaced it with I. So that I is not recognizable and written like L in certain type of, you can say, certain type of languages or certain type of fonts. Another type of attack is pre-post or build hooks. This is another case study which is related to NPM packages. A very specific example is UA Parcel JS. The role of this particular package is to identify or create certain information related to the user agent from the browser itself. However, this particular package, after the attack, had some installation guides which were like totally different from the previous or the original version of benign version of the package. Now, what it did is it installed CoinMiner for a particular wallet in the person who has actually, you know, end up installing this particular package at that time, and it also created a Trojan DanaBot, which was actually kind of a doing of this particular package during that time, which when it was contaminated. Third type of attack is related to obfuscation. So what happens is that from the static scanners, the previous ones are something that can be rule-based information and can be added to the pipeline when you are installing any pip installs or anything like that. However, when it comes to a specific type of attack, where what Threat Actor does is it converts the plain English language or any kind of code into a base64 string and includes in the code. So the static scanners will not be able to identify whether it is the benign code or it's just the string which has been used, which could be some kind of installation guide or something like that. Another case study which is related to this information only. And this is an example that you are able to see over here. So this is the B64 string, which looks like completely benign because we can't see what the decode version looks like. However, if we try to decode it, it says like completely different information. Fourth type of attack is credential touchpoints. So the .env files that we have or .aws/credential file, any kind of information which is stored or credentials which are stored during the installation, AWS credentials or Azure CLI credentials, anything can be actually looked at and data can be transferred. The PyTorch is like one of the other blog which was released. It happened during the Christmas, December 25, and lasted till 30th. So these are the libraries which have like millions of downloads. So if one developer is at the end of the day affected, it has chances of, you know, password spraying. So if they are using the same credential for any other places or any other account, there are chances that these will increase multifold, and it has chance of leaking credentials for the other company resources as well. Now, let's just try to see how the agentic cyber defense could be of help to start with. I'm not saying like this is the perfect solution. However, there's a difference. So for example, there are certain websites that will tell you about like what package has like what kind of vulnerabilities related to it. That is something that we'll be looking at in a few minutes. However, at the end of the day, we all know that if we provide like more information or more liberty to the agentic system, it might end up, you know, installing or changing the repos as well. So there are pros and cons on both the sides. So what I did is I tried to use a graph lang library for the demo building. First node over there is like kind of scanning, which is offline static scanning. And there is no execution, no fetching. And the tarball that I created for this particular demo is totally benign, is something that I have generated. Second step is to enrich data. So there is a very specific like open source information or intelligence which is available, which is termed as OSINT. And you can find it like for any kind of fields. It gives you the indicators, which could be the domains, IP addresses. For the packages also, it gives you information around the specific package that you have that we'll see in a minute. And these indicators are publicly available, and we can leverage these for our safety purposes from the side of things when we install packages. Once scanning and enrichment has been done, then LLM analyzes both of the information and then try to see, based on the policy guardrails, whether it has to be approved or it has to fall back. In terms of the act scenario, like if LLM thinks that it is something of malicious content, then it tries to just create the PRs or Jira or alerts. It doesn't go ahead and block the user from installing it or something like that. Towards the end, like for the audit purposes, I've also added a file which will narrate the human manner, human readable format, what happened, what are the steps which were taken. And the guardrails are something just to make sure that whatever the agentic system is able to do is under control. So that only means that we are using open source data as of now. There is a least authority that it can't block any user. It just creates PRs. And at the end of the day, we have like scorecards and action files, narrative, so that people can go ahead and look at related information too. I'll show like one example for OSINT cases. So this particular website gives you information on certain Python packages. And over here, you can see npm, pypi, go, or Docker packages. And let's look at the requests only. And the health score of the package is like quite low. However, there is no security concerns which are flagged for this particular package. The low is just because of the maintenance. It is inactive, and community is also kind of limited. However, the other one that we were actually looking at before, the wrong one, if we try to search for that, we have that package also over here. Now, if we try to click on this one, we have security reviews which are required, and the maintenance is still inactive, but someone in the community is actually maintaining it. So whenever we go ahead, like this is a kind of an open intelligence, which is available in terms of the indicators. And this intelligence can be used on our day-to-day lives to try to see if this package is something that I should be installing or not. There are other platforms like CISA, which is a government platform, and provides information on whenever a particular package has some sort of malware detected or any other information related to cyber attack. So these articles are something that can be ingested into the engineering system again, and then it can actually give us like a lot more information. So for the demo, I'll show just a small demo on how or what can we do with this. So I have added like kind of a lot of tools, narrator, scanner, and actions, decider, enricher. And if I try to run this, so the scanning has started, which was the first node. The score has been declared for this particular use case. Then after the scanning, there is like enrichment from the open source intelligence. Then the decision whether the scanning and the enrichment results are actually something to be you know, flagged. And in case of the act, there is a PR message which has been published. There is no PR as of now which is created. However, for if we try to see these files specifically, so the narrative file that we see over here contains all the information. What is the SHA-256 which was found over there in this particular tarball, and what is corresponding score, intensity of the score, post-install detection. So the second use case that we actually looked at, base64 execution. So it actually tried decoding if there is any base64 information available, and credential paths. So AWS credentials or any other Google credential that if it is able to see or extract. There are certain URLs. So for example, what happens is there were certain scenarios where if a particular package has been installed, what they do is they try to monitor the network calls as well. And those network calls are made to a particular IPs. So which is like at the time when they are trying to do certain information stealing, they try to send it to certain IP addresses or upload over there. And those kind of things is something that can be looked at from the open source information too. There are certain packages that do not require you to import in your file to steal the data. At the back end, they can do everything. They can run these wrong scripts and steal the information. If you try to see the report.json, it has information available, what was the rule, what was the match, and corresponding information for each and every rule which has been detected to be malicious, and path to the files, source URLs. This is like kind of a demo version. I didn't run it on the exact package as of now. And reference to the OSINT as well, so that if somebody, you know, if it has been deployed in a particular organization, if somebody wants to deploy people or analyst or threat analyst onto this particular job, they can go ahead and know from where they have to start their investigation. The next thing is, sorry. Yeah. So at the end of the day, whenever there is an audit happening or in the organization, people need to talk about like how many risky package has been blocked. What is the mean time of detection or mean time of response for supply chain findings? What is the false positive rate? And what is the coverage? How many repos have been covered or filtered or scanned for these kind of attacks? And how many PRs have been logged in? However, if you try to see it from the ROI lens, I'll be taking like a very simple example. So I'm not taking any cost related to the fact that people will have to, or the companies will have to deploy at the end of the day, some threat analyst who will be looking at these kind of PRs or build this particular system. However, if you try to see the avoided loss, it is somehow related to the prevented installs, probability of exfiltration, and impact per incident. So just for the sake of example, if you try to see like how many installs have been prevented, which is like I'm taking a very small number to be 10, probability of exfiltration, again, very small, which is like kind of very close to the human error as well. And impact per incident, if it is 10K, then the avoided losses come around somewhere around 300K. So this is a very small example how much loss can be avoided, but it depends upon case to case or what has been stolen at the end of the day. So if it is kind of a credential which has been stolen, these numbers might be like even more. Yeah. So I hope you guys took back like a lot of information related to how we can on day-to-day life actually end up securing our systems. And yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, we have time for questions. So raise your hands if you have questions. The one here in the middle.
Hi, thank you so much. My experience with more or less automated tools for that is hit and miss. We mainly struggle with lots of false positives from these tools. Can you give any recommendation how to avoid those, or maybe which tools to use, which tools not to use?
To avoid false positives?
Yes, for example, the SNCC.io advisory you just showed, even for my open source repositories, it links to totally unrelated GitHub repositories and gives popularity scores for totally different repos which have nothing to do with the actual tool I searched there. This kind of hits the mark and is quite frustrating when you are trying to actually follow up on the backed incident.
Okay, so when it comes to agentic systems, we have to have like policies and controls at each and every node or agent that we create and any task that they do. So they have to be optimized at that level. However, if we see from the static running, which would be the rule-based approach, we can compare it with what an agentic system has been doing and then try to see like how much false positive is coming out to be from that particular exercise. So we can include like human in the loop as well. So on the step one, if they are scanning something different or enriching it in a wrong way, it can be they can stop them or provide like more feedback so that feedback can be stored in memory and that feedback can be actually looked up again, long-term memory or short-term memory. And based on that, they can see if this was the false positive which was observed before. Now, if something like this happens again, then this is something has to be avoided, or maybe the critique and the agent will have to talk again related to it. So there are multiple ways to do that. It totally depends upon like kind of situation. But that is kind of doable. There'll be like always be some false positive there, but we can engage threat analysts to see like how to avoid those or how to remove those.
Are there more questions? I would have a question. At what stage does this scanning happen? On one slide, you said it happens on a merge request, so that you don't merge code that is vulnerable. But if you do a merge request which has a dependency, then at least the developer created this merge request already has the malware, had the malware running, and so it's already too late.
Yeah. So it totally depends at what stage you want to deploy this kind of solution, because there has to be some, you know, kind of balance between the developer's time as well as the number of, packages that you are asking them to avoid. So it could be the case that at the policy level, when you start with, you kind of give developers with the list of packages that they can install. If they try to install something else, they have to probably raise a request. So that will be the first step. And at the time, let's say if we do not use the first one, then at the time when the PR is actually merging and the build is in progress, that is the time when developer has no interaction, doesn't require any interaction, right? So that time it can scan everything and then probably merge it after that.
Okay. Is there also a way to do it at the package registry level? That in the first place, the problem is that people upload malware and nobody notices it. So is there also AI scanning happening at NPM or Python package index?
Yeah, I believe because in one of the cases, the malware was in the package for you can say a few hours only.
Yeah,
they detected it pretty fast. And the one in the PyTorch, because the PyTorch package, interim package, were overridden by PyPI. So they took like 5 days to identify it. However, in some NPM packages, it was like a few hours delay only.
Okay. There are more questions in the audience? Like time for one or two more questions? I don't see any raised hands. So then, thank you very much for your talk.
Thank you.